Yes, I do, Sister White.
We will not fear.
The kingdom is alive. The kingdom's on the move with the poor and the meek and the hungry and the lonely.
I'll never forget it.
Welcome to Adventist Voices, Spectrum's podcast. I'm Alexander Carpenter, and I'm honored to be joined by Eric Anderson as we talk about Ellen White for today. Thanks for talking with all of us.
Delighted to be here.
So one of the things that has been a part of the Spectrum conversation for a long time is the role of Ellen White. And recently, you were part of an Ellen White for Today conference that happened on the campus of Pacific Union College. I was there, and we reported on it on the Spectrum website. You issued a statement on Ellen White that we'll be discussing today, and we'll be thinking about where this goes. What's the future for Ellen White? But first, I'd love to hear from you how you first encountered Ellen White as an Adventist and also as a historian. What role did she play in your thinking?
Well, I was thinking about that this morning. My first teaching experience was in Borneo, Malaysia. And one of the things I taught to a workers' training class, a post-high school class, was prophetic guidance, the ministry of Ellen White. That was a very interesting experience. And when I came back and went to the University of Chicago, I briefly worked in the summer for Don McAdams, who'd been my teacher at Andrews. And he was in the middle of this research that he was carrying on Ellen White's use of historians in great controversy. I actually typed some of that document with its triple columns and so on. And then, of course, there were other things going on during this period as historians were really thinking about Ellen White's context. That one word, I think, is the most essential one, that Ellen White is not a figure without an historical context. Ron Numbers is writing during this time. He writes his book in, 1975, about the time I was finishing up at Chicago and coming to PUC. So it was something that was hard to avoid. And then when it came to PUC, we created a class about 1978 in denominational history that was heavily focused on Ellen White and the current discussion of it. It was very interesting to teach that. It was a team taught class. We had people from the history department and religion department. And we had a summer seminar, summer session of 2 weeks that was filled with elementary school teachers who were taking it for a requirement. It was startling to me to notice the gap between the people who were shocked by our discussion of Ellen White's historical context and were suspicious of what we were saying. And then on the other hand, there were people who quietly would come up and say, I'd pretty much given up on Ellen White. And now I realize, listening to the background you're providing, that that's not necessary. I think we still have this deep division in the Adventist church, maybe even you could say extremes. I noticed as word got out about this working conference we had here, there were some fairly extreme reactions. There were people who were kind of suspicious of who are these people. And then there were some people who really got worked up in social media saying, these people are fake scholars. They're apologists. They're telling same old lies. And I guess I'm a little intrigued. Maybe we could talk about that. Why are they feeling so intense? And why are there people just grinding their teeth over this still, I guess?
Yeah.
Anyway, Ellen White and Ellen White issues were impossible to avoid for any young Adventist scholar in the 1970s.
Yeah, that the 70s was definitely the backdrop for this working conference I observed. And in many ways, it included folks like Don McAdams, Jonathan Butler.
Really old people.
Five former university presidents, including yourself, folks who have kind of been thinking about these issues for decades. And I think that's what I think made this particularly significant. That 70s generation, in many ways, was sort of coming back and saying, okay, where are we today? What effect has that academic critical approach to Ellen White, what has it produced? And in many ways, I think people miss that important nuance. And we'll talk about that as we talk about the statement that you released, because there's been a lot of other approaches to Ellen White, in part because the larger denomination has, in many ways, not dealt with what happened in the 70s yet. So there's...
Yeah, and I think we are in danger of repeating the experience of the 70s and 80s.
Yeah.
We've worked through that experience in North America and in the West, but I think in the places where the church is growing most actively, we could simply go through the same kind of cycle where people make inappropriate claims for Ellen White or misuse Ellen White, and then people counterattack and say, no, that's not right. And it does sound kind of like a military stalemate with a lot of bloodshed. And I don't think that's really necessary. I think we could build on some things we learned in the past and then move in a more constructive direction.
Yeah, I mean, constructive is absolutely the way to characterize this working conference. It is some folks who have been around the block in administrative roles, thought very seriously about Adventism in terms of ideas and institutions, and see a problem out there that is looming that they've experienced before and are trying to avoid down the road, just to kind of underline what you're saying here. There was nothing radical about what happened at this conference. It was quite moderate and quite serious.
And we don't have to do it again. We don't have to repeat our quarrels in the past, I don't think.
Yes, absolutely. Well, let's talk specifically about some of the takeaways from this conference. It was a really beautiful. It happened October 22 weekend, so it was appropriate. There was nothing disappointing about it. Great lodging, food, and a really terrific spirit of interaction, questions, presentations.
I think some of the most interesting stuff was what happened between the meetings. You know.
Yes, absolutely.
And we had a wonderful feast hosted by Spectrum, and it was just amazing to see what was going on at all the tables.
What a fun group. George Knight was there. He kind of kicked it off. Why don't you start there with you kind of crafted these presentations, and I'm curious why you had George kick it off, and why don't you talk about some of the takeaways from the whole weekend for you?
Well, in all of the presentations, we were telling people, don't think of this as a scholarly paper. You're going to be sharing with us some ideas about particular issues, and the real heart of this will be the discussion that follows. We started with George because George, frankly, is the senior Adventist scholar at this point, as far as what he's produced, his influence. And he gave a talk called Changing My Mind Painfully. And he really talked about some things he's talked about in other forums, where he said there was a certain picture of Ellen White that he was given as a student. And he's found that is not only inaccurate, it's not what she herself believed about herself. He was followed by a presentation by Don McAdams, who said he looked at a whole bunch of ways in which the church could have responded. And really, you look at Don's work, it is extremely conservative in a certain sense.
Yeah.
He goes through the evidence for the way Ellen White used historical sources in Great Controversy, and he offers in the 1970s the most cautious and constructive and conservative interpretation he can give. And the White estate and other church leaders at first seemed like they were going to go along with that. And then there's a counterattack led by a seminary professor who says, don't concede anything, basically. And what happens is McAdam's work, which plays by the rules, checks with the brethren of experience, as they call them, and does not publicize it, is largely ignored.
Mm-hmm.
And so really this conference grew out of the fact that Don's work has finally been published. This Oak and Acorn book, Ellen White and the Historians. And we're wondering, okay, now can we move on to other things? Jonathan Butler had another kind of counterfactual presentation where he compared the book he's writing now about Ellen White with the book he was working on in the 1970s, late 70s. He was working on a biography of Ellen White. And he showed us in a number of ways in which the book he's writing now is a more complex book. He's impatient, as he's told us, with this kind of false dichotomy. Either Ellen White was inerrant or she was a fraud. And he ends up saying he's more sympathetic, a more sympathetic biographer than he would have been probably earlier on. We had a very interesting presentation from Katie Van Arsdale from the Adventist Center for Adventist Research, kind of bringing this elderly group up to speed on the fact that much of the work that was carried out painstakingly over years and years and years, now with the technical sources available to us, including artificial intelligence, could be done in a matter of hours. So really, in a way, for example, Walter Ray spends years comparing sources and finding parallels. That probably could be done in less than a week if you had the right sources and the right technology.
Amazing.
A very thought-provoking thing. Then the next day, we had a couple of presentations that moved us in completely new directions. Denny Fortown talked about the way in which his own life was changed by reading Steps to Christ. And yet at the same time, he's able to do a critical historical analysis of Steps to Christ. And he's able to talk about the role of Marion Davis and putting that book together and so on. To me, that was very, very impressive. And the way in which he could be a good historian and a believer at the same time offered some really, thought-provoking possibilities. Paul McGraw made a point. It's one of those points that is so profound that when you think about it, it's obvious. He said Ellen White should be approached primarily as a preacher, a homilist. She is... all of her writing is designed to promote a certain kind of evangelistic purpose. And if we treat her as a philosopher or a public intellectual or historian or a theologian, we're missing the point.
Mm-hmm.
She works like a preacher. Gil Valentine had an afternoon presentation. We talked about Ellen White's temperament. And this is an interesting one because It sort of turns up in an unexpected way. As all of these biographies are being written about Adventist leaders of the past, we're learning some things about the way in which Ellen White rebuked them. And in some cases, we're uneasy with that. In a lot of ways, the the big issue today, I suppose, would be her temperament. And then on Sabbath, Terry Amott, who's also a biography of Ellen White, had some very interesting comments to say about Ellen White, in particular, reminding us of the implications of the fact that Ellen White was a woman and what that means and how it affects her work. And then finally, we ended up with Larry Garrity and Ron Graybill thinking about how we should affirm Ellen White and comparing the fundamental beliefs as they're written over time and thinking of ways in which we can use language that's clearer and stronger and maybe more persuasive. And then we ended up with this draft of an Angwin appeal, a draft that I wrote, but lots and lots of people got involved in it along the way. And it would be false for me to claim the statement at this point. There's so many other things. Anyway, that was what we did. And as I say, all kinds of things happen around the dinner table, around the breakfast table, that meant this was a group of scholars comparing notes.
Well, one of the outcomes from that is I went and bought Steps to Christ.
Oh yeah, the special edition. Yeah,
not the one I read as a teen, which is heavily underlined. Just to show that to you here, since we're
and you did the underline.
I did. This is my
okay,
own.
All right. Okay.
Multiple times through that. The reason I bought this hard copy edition from Andrews University is because it's a critical edition that Denis Fortin talked about in his paper. And you mentioned, obviously, the points he made about the editorial construction behind Steps to Christ. I found that history very interesting. The reason I bring that up is just because I think that the more people understand about this working conference, the more they'll be interested in reading Ellen White within the context of her times and the context of a changing Adventism as well. You wrote this statement and you invited feedback on it. It has been roundly loved by many folks and then criticized both by folks who think that it didn't go far enough and folks who think that it went too far. And I think that means that it was a success.
that's probably true. It's somewhere down the middle.
Yeah, it in many ways, it captured the spirit of the conference. Can you just talk about a couple of the points that you made in that statement? We'll put it up on Spectrum so folks can read it again. We put it up.
Well, I could just read it, and we could talk about some of these points.
Yeah.
Seventh-day Adventists face a crisis. Over the last 50 years, Ellen White has lost much of her influence among us. That right there might provoke some discussion. There may be people who doubt that there's a crisis. I don't think there's any question that Ellen White has much less influence than when I was a college student. Less influence probably than when you were a college student.
Yes.
You know, I think of this often. We had in the 60s, we were constantly talking about things like student rights. And so there was a committee set up, a faculty staff committee and administration, to prepare a document on a student bill of rights for Andrews. I don't know if it included unreasonable search and seizure and stuff like that. But anyway, the first thing we did was, what does Ellen White say about student rights and responsibilities? And we went to, you know, Fundamentals of Christian Education and other things like that. And faculty and students together, we looked at that. I don't think that would happen today. I don't think if you said, well, let's prepare a document on student rights, that would be the first thing you begin. So Adventists face a crisis. Adventists are now deeply divided, especially in places where this messenger of the Lord lived and worked, the United States, Australia, and Europe. Many claim to affirm her spiritual gifts, but avoid the hard work of responsibly applying her counsel in new situations. They say they are defending a precious tradition, but they refuse to repudiate outmoded applications or considerative evidence. And I suppose at this point, somebody say, what? What are the outmoded applications? What's the new evidence? I would say we live in a world that is very different from Ellen White's world. And even as we wish to affirm the second coming and affirm the apocalyptic understanding of Adventism, we'd have to say the world is very different today. Ellen White and her colleagues would be stunned by a world where China is a great power.
Yeah.
They'd be stunned by a world which has a resurgent Islam.
Mm-hmm.
And frankly, one of the problems facing Christian believers in lots of parts of the world is blasphemy laws. Blasphemy laws have a bigger impact on Adventist freedom than Sunday laws.
Mm-hmm.
There are plenty of other examples we give. I was thinking, Ellen White's counsel on race relations in 1908 changes when you get to 1968. At least it should. Not always did that happen.
Yeah.
So for them, it seems Ellen White can do no wrong. Other Adventists have demolished inaccurate claims for Ellen White, but have failed to rebuild on a sounder foundation. They invoke her language when convenient, but do not allow her writings to shape their choices. For many, she ceased to be a teacher. Indeed, for a few, she can do no right. Year by year, Ellen White's prophetic voice loses its urgency and power. Soon she may be little more than a literary ornament in sermons, one that seldom moves hearts or changes minds. Again, I don't think that's controversial. I think over time, her prophetic voice has lost some of its power. There may be a few signs of resurgence. We can talk about that. As experienced scholars and administrators, we appeal to our fellow believers to reaffirm her value as a leader, preacher, and spiritual guide. Just as it is impossible to explain American democracy without Lincoln or understand the Reformation without Luther, we affirm that the Advent movement will weaken its witness about the Sabbath, righteousness by faith, or the blessed hope if we leave out Ellen White and God's leading in our founding. We do not pretend to have all the answers to this crisis. Throw in that word crisis again. We know that it's urgent for us to listen anew to Ellen White, using everything we've learned about her humanity, her historical context, her literary sources, and her spiritual development to create a better understanding of the ministry. So stop ignoring the evidence of the 1970s and 80s.
Yeah.
Whatever her imperfections, we need to acknowledge her profound debt to her in how we live, work, and hope. That last phrase is a wonderful Butler phrase. This remarkable woman has much to teach both Adventists and the wider world. If we heed her, she will tell us to put the Bible first. She can show us how to combine health insights with ethical impulses, create schools that build character, to affirm God's transforming grace, and to rebuke any power that persecutes the name of God. Above all, she would still direct our steps toward Christ, illuminate the fullness of salvation, strengthen our longing for the new earth, even as we seek to ease the suffering of this old one. So we'll see. We've gotten a variety of reactions. I think the most interesting one is the dog that didn't bark. We have not gotten any kind of reaction from sort of the official defenders of Ellen White.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure why that is. It may well be that the statement itself is unobjectionable. It may just be, well, I always think of the joke about the psychiatrist. You know, two psychiatrists meet on the sidewalk. One says, good morning, and the other says after he leaves, I wonder what he meant by that. You know, that may be, well, who are these guys? Why did they say that?
Mm-hmm. Well, thanks for reading through that. It's as you noted, some of the turns of phrase in there. I think it's in many ways, it has its own inspirational quality in that it speaks to our time and also allows us to reflect on perhaps who Ellen White was in her time. And let's pull on that thread a little bit. One of the things that came up during this working conference is really thinking about who Ellen White was stripped away from the kind of magisterium of the church, and also the role of the editors that she worked with. And she was very devotional. She was someone who had evidence of a spiritual walk that changed over time. And I'm curious, as people talked about her, not just inspired, but the way that she's inspired readers, could you reflect a little bit on the devotional Ellen White and ways you see that as a helpful kind of landing point for Adventists who perhaps have found they can't rely on her for historical insights or scientific insights, but still would like to have some sort of connection to her?
Well, I had an interesting experience this last weekend. I was watching the Loma Linda church service, and my former student, Jonathan Henderson, was preaching. So I needed to see what he was going to say.
Yeah.
And he highlighted an Ellen White quote that somebody had sent me a couple months ago. And I'm thinking, what's going on here? And I was intrigued by the quote and how he used it. This is from Signs of the Times in 1887. And I'd be interested in your reaction to this. It's different from maybe what we expect. Ellen White writes, "The shortness of time is frequently used as an incentive for seeking righteousness and making Christ our friend. This should not be the great motive with us, for it savors of selfishness. Is it necessary that the terrors of the day of God should be held before us, that we may be compelled to right action through fear? It ought not to be so. Jesus is attractive. He is full of love, mercy, and compassion. He proposes to be our friend, to walk with us through all the rough pathways of life. He says to us, 'I am the Lord thy God, walk with me, and I will fill thy path with light.'" Well, how should I react to that as someone sitting in Jonathan's electronic audience? It strikes me to be very inappropriate for me to say, "Well, let's find out the sources she might have used. Where did that wording come from?" That's a way of evading what she has to say. And what she has to say does cut right to the quick. It focuses on, how do we live today? How do we respond? What's the role of fear? And how do we react to this idea of Christ as our friend? So I'm wondering, maybe I'm being a little too pessimistic when I talk about the crisis, because it seems like there's some hints that people are beginning to say, let's go back and look at her and use her in a different way than we would use her if we're creating a critical edition or something like that. When Jonathan got done reading that, I know for me, I was struck by the power of that statement. And I was intrigued that another friend had sent me the same thing a few weeks earlier. What does all that mean? Does it mean that we might see ordinary Adventists beginning to treat Ellen White not as a philosopher or a paleontologist, but as a spiritual guide? I don't think that would be a demotion for Ellen White if we did that.
Yeah, I like you, the term you use there. She gets lots of descriptors. You know, prophet is one that gets used. You know, famous writer is another one.
We had one pastor kept saying, one of my favorite writers.
Yes, exactly.
He wouldn't tell you anymore.
You know, sister White has its own egalitarian meaning.
Yeah.
Spiritual guide is another one that I think in many ways people have relied on her for that. We often think of her as a sort of instructor with, you know, divine authority. But you can keep the divinity in there, or at least the spiritual meaning in there, when we think of her as someone who is giving us, I think, reflecting on a life of personal devotion, very aware of the way the denomination is changing or not changing for her own taste, and still keeping a connection that transcends it.
It's intriguing to see the way in which Ellen White develops over the life of her, over her lifetime, and to see the ways in which, instead of simply settling into defending an old position, she is constantly pushing the church into some new understandings. Her behavior in the 1880s is really interesting.
Yeah. Well, perhaps that ability to change with the times has inspired you and inspired the folks who attended this working conference. As you're reflecting on the future, I know that I'm working with Jonathan Butler, and through him with you and many others on an upcoming special issue of the journal that will revisit some of these issues through some papers and some excerpts, and provide our audience with, I think, a great reading opportunity. And I'm curious for you, you know, there was talk about future conferences, working conferences. How would you like to see the church respond to this statement and the motivations behind it?
Well, I think this kind of informal working conference needs to be followed by other conferences. It's interesting to see see who we invited and who we didn't invite. We started out not inviting some of the key official leaders whose job it is to explicate Ellen White, a defender. I would like to see future meetings in which you see the White Estate involved. You would see the General Conference Archives involved. You'd see the North American Division Archives. You'd see the Center for Adventist Research. In some ways, the official spokesmen have less maneuvering room than the people who are 4 score years old and retired. And so on.
Yeah, retirement. But, as I've learned in this role, retirement tends to open up the personal archive.
I think what we need is this conference has got to be a beginning, and I'm seeing some hints that there might be that sort of thing. We had a friend, that you know, in another part of the country, who wanted to start out by bringing the scholars in and sharing the new consensus with the lay people. We had to say, hey, no, we need to work out the new consensus first, and then we're ready to share. And I think I've listened to ways in which various groups have engaged this. One of the most interesting is Chuck Sandifer's Faith and Learning class at Sligo. Jonathan Butler has been involved with a couple of Zoom Sabbath school classes, including Jim Walter's class, Lauren Seibold's class. All of that probably is a perfectly logical next step. I think there needs to be some publication. I think people need to write up some of their insights, and we go from there. It is not going to be probably a top-down solution. It's going to be people reading Ellen White, finding things they hadn't noticed before, just as this example I gave you from this week, applying this new evidence. What won't work is more of the same.
Yeah.
Just keep doing what we're doing, downplaying any significant evidence and ignoring problems. That hasn't worked, and the result has been to weaken her influence. I think we can see in Ellen White's own lifetime some flexibility that disappears after her lifetime. And there's some interesting examples of that.
Well, I know that the Butler biography is already out and being discussed, and so I'm looking forward to seeing what Denny Fortin is able to share from his research.
But you say the Butler biography is out. He hasn't finished the book yet. He's working on it.
Oh, okay. I misunderstood.
You need to nag him about it.
Okay, I'll check.
Yeah, he's working on a book, and Terry Amott's working on a book, and it'll be interesting to see who finishes first.
I was talking about Denny Fortin's G.I. Butler biography.
Oh, I'm sorry. Oh, yes, you're right.
Yeah.
The big difference between G.I. and Jonathan.
Yes, yes. So I do think that there are some folks who are working on this. I think they would make great guests at forum meetings or just at a local church that's ready for these kind of discussions. And I do think that this working conference is an idea that could travel really well. I'm not saying that you would take everyone on the road, but I do think the way that you worked your way through the issues of Ellen White, I could see that working really well at a kind of mature church. I think it would draw a lot of interested people, and I think that it would be a very constructive experience for the members. So, just thinking about that, I'm of course trying to promote you as a road show here.
Well, I don't know. I don't know if there's a future there.
Well, thank you for the work that you did putting together this working conference, and thank you for your lifetime of really applying your gifts to bettering our community.
Well, it's interesting. Ellen White certainly wasn't where I started. I've used this word reconstruction, implying Ellen White, and that's really what I was doing, American history. But anyway, well, thank you for having me, and we would love to hear more comments and reactions to the appeal, constructive comments.
Of course. Well, people can reach out at contact@spectrummagazine.org, and I'll send all the reconstructed ones to you.
Okay, all right.
Yes, I knew Sister White.
We will not fear.
The kingdom is alive.